Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 80. Yes, it's podcast number 80. I am Michael Citro. I am the managing editor and founder of themainland.com. Joining me is David Rowe, one of our writers, the writer who is well known for his Pride Pub pieces, and he tells you what to drink and what to eat on game day. So, Dave, how you doing?
I'm great, coming off a little mini vacation, but that's how important this is to me, is that, you know, instead of having my vacation go all the way through this evening, I came back early just to do this. So very important to me, especially number 80.
Well, we admire your sense of duty and, you know, and your commitment, for sure. And, you know, speaking of commitment, the commitment of Orlando City B finally resulted in the team getting its first USL victory of 2017. We have more on that later with our special guest, Zach Carroll, center back for OCB. Before that, we get to that, though, we unfortunately have to break down Orlando City's first loss of the 2017 MLS season. We'll start there. Just give me your overall impressions of the game.
To me, they looked like they were twitchy. That's the word that kept going through my head as I was watching the game. Over anxious, something like that. They couldn't seem to make anything happen, especially in the final third. So, you know, it was like something was a little bit off with everybody all night. It wasn't any one thing in particular. I mean, they actually passing, they did good. I think they actually had better passing stats than the Crew did. You know, you go and look stats wise, it shouldn't have been as bad as it was, but that's why I'm saying it. It was just, there was something slightly off. Like they were a half a second, you know, out of sync, with the rest of the world. And that it threw everybody off all night.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there was some nervousness, from the team going on the road for the first time playing a Crew team that was very hot coming in. Had won a couple of games. In fact, had beaten Portland. Portland hadn't lost a game yet. They played Portland on the international week, which was a bye week for Orlando City. So Orlando City had played three games. Columbus had played five. So there was a discrepancy in being in rhythm, in terms of being in rhythm, because you know as a professional athlete you get used to that one game every week, and your game routine, your game week routine is the same week in and week out. If you have those off weeks, then that messes with that. And then you compound that by going on the road for the first time. Maybe a little bit of nerves playing away from Orlando City Stadium for the first time. That's what it looked like to me, is that everything looked okay until the final third of the pitch, where guys lacked imagination or they just seemed to make some strange decisions. And, you get Carlos Rivas leading the break, and instead of trying to play in Larin or maybe taking a turn and waiting for some other numbers to arrive, he launches one, as we've seen in the past, and kind of falls back on some bad habits. Then you got, you know, I think Matias Perez Garcia did that once. You had Giles Barnes played a great back heel in for Larin, and instead of shooting the ball, he crossed it over for nobody, sort of in between the Rivas run and the run to the back post. It just was not sharp at all in the final third, and that was a little bit disappointing to see. And Columbus took their chances. They didn't have a ton of good chances, but the ones they had, Justin Miram made them pay. And Miram is he's a good player. He's a wing player, but he used to be a striker, so he's got a very good finish. Certainly it was the first time that we've seen Will Johnson victimized at right back early in the game when Miram got in and scored his goal. And then the second goal came off of a really good spell for Orlando City. And it looked like they were coming into the game. It kind of looked in the second half like Orlando City was the more likely team to get the next goal. And then Christian Aguita misinterpreted what Antonio Nocerino was going to do, sent a ball way out in front of him instead of Nocerino wanted the ball played to his feet, and the next thing you know, Miram's got it again and you're yanking it out of your net. So 2-0 to the Crew, but I think in some respects maybe the scoreline's a little bit flattering to Columbus.
Yeah, it was like you said, they took advantage of the chances. I mean, they what, four shots, three on target, but and then two goals. So I mean, that's good stats if that's what you got. But it does speak to the limited amount of chances. You know, like we said, it seemed like Orlando City had gotten into the game after that first goal. They were maybe starting to do something. When that second goal happens, I think that took it back out of them. So then you see, you know, then they're just trying to score from, you know, way out. They're not working the ball in. They had given up on even trying to do anything in the final third. So it was, you know, it was, I'm sure it was frustrating for them because it was frustrating for us. The other thing that I like I said, Will Johnson, you know, did get burned a little bit, which, you know, that's not his natural position. You know, we can only expect so much of the man back there. He's done well. Maybe being on the road first time, who knows? But the back line was not as sharp as they'd been in the previous games. Not that they were bad. It just everybody was just a little bit off, and I think most likely we can chalk that up to, you know, being on the road for the first time this year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You want to keep it going when you got a good thing going, and they had a week off for the international break and came out and just weren't sharp. I think if that game's in Orlando City Stadium, maybe it has a little bit different outcome, considering the, you know, if the chances are about the same as they were, and all the other statistical you know, metrics are the same. I think maybe Orlando City finds a way to get a goal or two, and maybe get something out of that. But we'll see Columbus again this year, and we don't have to go back to Mapfre Stadium, which is where they, you know, one of the places where Orlando City's never won. They've gotten a draw there, but never won a game there, and two of those games failed to score a goal. So it's not been the best location for the Lions to play, and they'll regroup and try. You know, it doesn't get any easier. You come home and play New York Red Bulls, and even though the Red Bulls are on a bit of a skid, they are still the Red Bulls, and they still have Sasha Kljestan, and they still have Bradley Wright Phillips, a couple of guys who have torn Orlando apart in the past, Felipe as well, and just, you know, a really good, solid team, and obviously they're going to eventually get it turned around. And last year they were 1-6 to start the season and got their season going by beating Orlando City. So they'll be confident coming into OCS this weekend, and we'll talk more about that in a bit. But I want to get your thoughts on who your man of the match was for Orlando City in the Columbus Crew match.
Man, that is a tough one.
I know. This was the toughest one for me, too.
I'm going to have to go with Notarino, and the reason why is, you know, there's nothing sticking out about it to me. So it's kind of one of those, you know, there's, when I'm thinking about the other players, okay, you know, I remember them doing this and it not working out, you know, Rivas taking shots from way out, et cetera. And, you know, we've talked about the problems that we had in the final third. And then we, you know, talked about the breakdown in the back. Well, the midfield, that was where a lot of the good passing was taking place. So for me, it's the fact that I'm not thinking of any big mistakes that he had, that for me, it's kind of the best of the worst there. But I'm going to go with Notarino.
It's funny because the Unimas announcer said that he was the worst player on the field. he was raving about MPG, raving about him, and he had just when he came off, he questioned why Orlando City was taking off the player that was played the best overall game on the day by far, he said, and just was raving about him. And MPG had just literally ruined an attack by trying a shot from way outside the box.
And right.
It was just a really bad decision to shoot in that situation. It would have taken something really special to beat Zach Steffen from that distance, and it didn't even worry him at all. So it was a curious thing that he was raving about MPG. Our grades person on the night was Logan, and Logan picked Giles Barnes. And that, I kind of, when I read that, I was like, really? I was a little bit surprised by that pick. And then the more I thought about it, I went, well, you know, he did link up very well with Donny Toya down the left side. He did provide some an outlet from pressure by being able to keep the ball. You know, he did have that nice back heel that led to a chance that Laren kind of decided not to shoot. And, you know, so he did do a lot of good things. And in a game where there wasn't a lot of distinguishing, things that put someone over other people, I thought that Giles Barnes was a fine pick. I picked Jonathan Spector because I thought that for the most part, Columbus has a very good attacking force, not just Ola Kamara, but you know, we saw what Miram could do. We've seen in the past what Finley can do, and obviously Higuain. And I thought Spector, for the most part, held down the middle and made things difficult. And Columbus really had to bomb down the wings and send in balls and attack from the flanks. And I thought Spector had another solid game. It was maybe not quite up to what he had done in the previous game, but I thought, for me, Spector was probably Orlando City's man of the match.
There's arguments being made for both of those, you know, looking back, you know, with Barnes, okay, yeah, you're right. He did some good things. And then Spector, for me, Spector would be kind of like my Notarino pick is that you didn't see, you know, that he wasn't where the action was. You know, it's the old, you know, if somebody's doing their job, you might not notice it because they're doing their job. You know, nothing really spectacular or bad is going on around them. You know, funny enough, on our grades, I think he had a 4.5 versus a 6.5 for Barnes. But, you know, like you say, I think that's more of a them looking at it versus what they, you know, expectations were versus actual on the field play.
Logan's a bit of a harsh grader, I've noticed.
He
had several guys that I thought I would have put a little higher than that. And, you know, he had a few guys that I was kind of in agreement with him and others that I wasn't. But, you know, I'm a guy that I'll always give people credit for being in the right spots. And even if they don't hit the target, you know, I got to take something off for not hitting the target. But if they're getting attempts, I would give them props for doing that because they're doing what they're supposed to do. It's just not kind of that final execution is not there. And Will Johnson led the team in shots. So I think I would have probably graded him out pretty good. Despite the fact that, you know, he started at right back and didn't have the best game at right back, but he also played midfield and I thought he was dangerous throughout the game in various ways. So, but you know, we all grade differently. I've been accused of grading too high, and I probably do, but I mean, that's just the way I am. I'm kind of the mindset that if I give you a 7, that's a 7 out of 10. That's a really good grade, people think. But then I look at it and go, but if you got a 70 out of 100 on a test, what would your grade be?
That would be a C.
Yeah. So maybe I'm just using a different sliding scale than most people are. I don't know, but you know, by those standards, pretty much everybody on the field flunked, you know, by what the way Logan graded. So, I mean, that's the way I look at it. And so, you know, everybody's approach is a little bit different and everybody sees the game differently. Cause I, you know, some games I've seen, people bashing, you know, say Notarino or Carrasco. And I thought he had a pretty good game. So we all see things a little bit differently. And you know, the fact is, Orlando City suffered its first loss, 2-0 to the Crew. It's over with, so we're not going 34-0 this year, sorry to say. So we'll start the quest to go 33-1 on Sunday against New York. So we'll talk a little bit more about the Red Bulls later because they're a bag of just absolute talent. And yeah, it's just a matter of time before they get it going. But, you know, we'll get into that a little bit later. I want to turn our attention to we keep it with Orlando City, but some off the field news because as we had talked about in the past, Lewis Gill has come to pass. He is an Orlando City player officially on loan from Querétaro. That was officially announced today. It was broken a while back by who was it? Julie Stewart Binks, I believe.
Yeah.
And there was a story in the Orlando Sentinel last night or on OrlandoSentinel.com. And you know, when there's a quote from the GM in the story, I don't think you need to wait for the official announcement. I think you're probably okay reporting it. So we knew last night that it was getting done, and it was officially announced today. Lewis Gill, a midfielder, is joining on loan. Now, this is a situation where the Lions had to get his rights from Real Salt Lake, where he played under Jason Kreis for a few years and up to 2013, and which that was his best year as a pro. He had 5 goals and 3 assists that year, and Real Salt Lake went to MLS Cup Final and CONCACAF Champions League. Or no, I'm sorry, US Open Cup Final. Okay. Other competition. So, you know, he's got some experience in the league. He's been successful. You know, he caught on with the Liga MX side, and that's a very good league quality-wise, but he wasn't able to get a lot of playing time there. But Orlando City had to send some targeted allocation money to RSL. The way it works is this. In 2018, Orlando City sends $100,000 in TAM, TAM to Real Salt Lake, unless Lewis Gill does not stay with the team. Then it goes down to 50,000. So a pretty good deal to get his rights, because if it turns out he if it doesn't work out and he's gone after this year, not a huge investment. And if he hangs around and is a useful player, then 100,000 TAM in TAM is not that big a price to pay for a useful player. He's 23 years old, so still fairly young, still developing, and he knows Jason Kreis's system, knows his tendencies, how he coaches, his philosophies, all of that. So this is, in my view, pretty much a can't lose proposition.
I agree, and like you say, the cost is not much. There is the option to purchase at the end of the 2017 season.
Yep.
You're right. He hasn't had a lot of playing time down at Cortaro. I'm saying it wrong.
It's all right. You know, you're a Yankee.
Yeah. Anyway, more importantly, he's had MLS experience. So 134 MLS appearances, 89 starts. He's got 11 goals, 5 of which were with RSL when he was there with Coach Kreis. 9 assists in total, 3 with Kreis, and then, like I said, 11 playoff appearances with 6 starts. So
Well, that five and three was just in 1 year. He was with Kreis a few
well,
years,
yes,
but
right.
that was all in that was all in 2013, his most recent year with Jason Kreis, his most recent
Right.
year in MLS.
So his best, that was exactly, so that was his best year. So that's the key to all of this for me. When we first, you know, read about the rumor, heard about the rumor, and then when I, you know, saw the news drop today, it goes back to, and we've discussed this before, coaches bringing in the people that he knows and trusts, that he knows will implement his view of how the game is to be played. And Gil is another one of those players. So it's somebody that he's able to bolster the midfield for. Yes, Kaká will be coming back at some point, but you know, I've also said this before, depth is good. And if it's somebody that coach has trust in, has experience in MLS, those are all positives. And like you said, especially since it's not going to cost us that much, at least from what
Yeah.
we can tell.
And not no international slot. He's from California. It's really a good deal in almost every respect. You know, the only bad thing is if it doesn't, for whatever reason, work out, if he doesn't come in and find his form and whatnot. But I mean, he knows what to expect. He might be one of the missing cogs that allows Jason Kreis to go back to a diamond midfield. He is, like I said, he's 23, so you've got, I think Giles Barnes is 28. I think MPG, I think off the top of my head, is 32, and Kaká is 34. So now you've got an attacking midfielder who can step in and play now, but can also be a guy who could be a major piece moving forward when those three guys are moving on. And although he's the same age as some of the guys at OCB, you know, some of the first team guys have been playing loaned to OCB and playing there. He's a way ahead of them in terms of games and development. So, you know, it's a case where Orlando City went out, found a player that could be useful, didn't cost a lot to get him, and certainly does add to the depth. So,
well, and like you said,
I say win-win.
I agree, and like you said, he's in between. So, you know, Kaká, MPG, and Giles Barnes, all 28 or older. The guys down on, you know, OCB, you've got Danny Deacon, who's 23 also, Richie, who's 22, and Pierre Da Silva, who's only 18. So he can be that experienced middle guy that as people retire, you know, move on, then, you know, if he's been able to work his way into the system, you know, get the playing time as we bring up the other ones, you know, as Richie comes up, as Pierre Da Silva comes up, then he's he becomes a transitional piece for going from, you know, what we had to what the future is. And that, you know, that having that is always helpful. It's kind of like, this is going to be really weird, but dogs. Okay. So whenever I have dogs, I always have one dog. And when that dog gets old, I get a puppy. And because the older dog will teach the puppy what to do, and the puppy will keep the older dog younger for a little while. And then when that dog passes away, well, I wait for the dog to get a little bit older, and then I get another puppy. Why? It helps with the transition. So I'm not saying that Gil's a puppy, but he's going to be that good transition guy for us.
All right. Well, good deal. Orlando City midfielders are dogs, and we're just waiting for the next puppy to come along.
Hey, but we
don't
all
die, anybody.
We all love dogs.
Well, hopefully we won't have to put anyone to sleep for their hamstring injuries. Why don't we turn our attention to the Orlando Pride? They made a move today as we're recording this, but it will be the day before as you're listening to this, if you listen to it when it pops out. And the Orlando Pride have waived one of the first signings the club ever made, and that's veteran forward Sarah Hagen. She's been released, and you know, this is one of those moves where it could be salary related. It could be as simple as opening up a roster spot for a potential Marta signing. There's a lot of things that could go into play with this. Obviously, Sarah didn't have a huge impact last year, but she did make 17 appearances, scored 2 goals, had 2 assists, and only 9 shots on goal. But what impressed me about her is 7 of her 9 shots, Dave, were on target. And she was a very good professional. It was always a pleasure to talk to her. We had her here on the podcast. And, you know, it's sad to see her go. But until we know what Tom Sormani's end game is on this move, you know, it's too soon to tell whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing for the Orlando Pride.
It's all going to boil down to all the massive amounts of speculation that is going through anybody who's looking into this's head right now. I mean, you right off the bat started with, "Hey, Marta." I mean, because if you're gonna dream big. Look, Sarah was a consummate professional. I mean, she played hard. Like I said, you know, we may not have gotten out of her everything that we would hope, but you can't take away anything from her effort. Like I said, how professional she is, and just what a great person and representative of the team she was. So, you know, like you say, I have no idea what prompted all of this, what's going on. It'll be interesting to see what comes of all of it. But we do wish her the best. I'm certain that she's going to be able to get on someplace. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, she is professional. She, you know, can score goals. It, you know, she may not have been the best, you know, maybe she didn't fit for us. Maybe she fits someplace else better. But the really interesting part is going to be what happens over the next few days, few weeks to see what was behind all of this.
Yeah, the veteran forward is probably not going to be out of work very long if she wants to continue on in the game. Of course, you know, it depends on what kind of offers she's getting, because it's a lot. I mean, the women's game is not like the men's game. It's a lot tougher to make a mid to low salary in the women's game than in the men's game. You can't really make a living on what the women make at the lower and middle end of the NWSL pay scale. So good luck to Sarah for sure. I do want to say that I'm not just trolling with the Marta talk. When I talk about Marta, it's not like when I talk about bringing Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Orlando City. That's, you know, pipe dream, you know. Marta, actually, discussions have taken place. I know this for a fact. I've had multiple sources tell me that discussions have taken place on that front, and that a deal could be done. And you know, not, you know, way better reporters than I am have talked about, you know, a Marta deal being, you know, close. So I'm not trying to troll anybody or get anybody hopes up. This is, you know, any deal can fall through at any time. Or the two sides could just maybe never come to the right agreement. So it's remains to be seen. But if this move was made, it doesn't necessarily mean anything for the Marta deal, but it could. It could be a part of that in terms of freeing up roster space and jettisoning one attacking player for another. So it's just speculation at this point, but there could be something to it. There's a little smoke there. I don't know if there's fire, but there's a little smoke to it anyway. So, all right. So we've covered Orlando City. We've covered the Pride. We've, of course, got to talk about Orlando City B. First victory of the season, a 3-1 win over Toronto FC 2. And I was in the stadium Tuesday night for that game. And I have to tell you, I don't know how good – I'm tempering my excitement about it a little bit because I don't know how good Toronto is. But – OCB played quite well in that game, except for about a 10 to 15 minute period at the end of the first half where Toronto was very dangerous. I'd say OCB basically handled the rest of that game, especially in the second half. And even after Pierre Da Silva got a straight red card with 20 minutes to play, you know, Toronto just never seemed like a threat after that. So a good win for the Young Lions, a much needed win for Anthony Pulis, and, you know, maybe some of the foolish and silly fire Pulis talk will hopefully subside now. Anthony Pulis is down there doing what Jason Christ needs him to do, what he wants him to do. And he's coaching a team, quite frankly, that from one week to the next, he has no idea who he's going to be playing. It's not even his decision. So, you know, for a coach to take that on is pretty admirable in my opinion, because you could go, you know, there's a lot of jobs in the USL now, and you could, with a name like his, you could go and get one of those jobs where there isn't that hanging over your head, and where you would have the ability to help find your own players, to pick your starting 11 and stick with them week in and week out, and you wouldn't have to necessarily develop them for the next level. But he is doing that. He is developing guys for the next level. So that's what Jason Christ wants, and that's what this setup with an MLS 2 team is all about.
You know, you're absolutely right. We've talked about that before, and I think we agree that he's doing a heck of a job down there, doing what his job is supposed to be. I actually did. I know you were at the stadium, but I actually did get to watch that game, first OCB game I've been able to catch so far, and I'm glad I caught that one. My goodness, it was a fun game to watch. The lads were on the front foot, like you said. Other than that one little brief period, they were on the front foot the entire time. They were aggressive and taking it to Toronto again and again and again. I think I even made a comment in our message board that Laria was a beast. He was everywhere. I mean, mm-hmm. he looked like he had a different speed than everybody else out there on the pitch. I mean, he was closing down. It looked like he was the Flash. I mean, he was just getting onto the ball. It was amazing. I mean, I'm sitting there watching him, and I'm seeing him, you know, sprint, 20 yards to close in on the ball. And one of those, I think it led up to one of the goals. He even took the ball away, and they went down and scored. So, I mean, it was so much fun to watch. They looked motivated, and it may be that, hey, after those two losses, everybody was a little, you know, itching. You know, they were at home and they took advantage of the opportunity. And if for some reason you didn't get to watch it, listeners, do yourself a favor. It should be on the USL YouTube channel. Go watch it. It was a fantastically fun game to watch.
It really was a fun game. And I'm going to back you up on Larea. I mean, Ant Pulis after the game, you know, he talked about Larea and Haji Berry and Da Silva and Austin Martz and said that they were really fantastic in the attack, and they really were. Larea had a passing accuracy for the night, for the entire evening, of 96.8%.
Oh, God.
For an attacking midfielder, that's insane, man.
That's utterly insane.
And, you know, you could see the development in his game, because Richie Larea is a guy who, if you just kind of took a deep breath and really blew hard, you could knock him down last year. And the first goal that he helped set up, Martz played him a ball, and he took the ball probably about 25 yards by himself while holding off a defender. Last year, he would have just been knocked to the ground last year and just, you know, shed like a sweater when it starts to get warm. But he kept it, not only kept control of the ball, but kept his feet. He ran out of real estate, so he found Da Silva on the left, and Da Silva just made a nice, perfect pass onto Haji Berry for an easy goal to start the scoring. And actually, it was the second goal. The first goal was a very interesting goal. That was the goal that Paul Klaus scored with his head, and probably Toronto a little bit upset about that, because the ball was just getting into the grasp of their goalkeeper, Angelo Cavalluzzo, and as he was catching it, Klaus went up and just headed it right out of his hands and into the net. So that was fun, and we were a little surprised in the press box that goal stood, because, you know, 99 times out of 100, they're blowing that whistle for saying that the keeper had it and you knocked it out of his hand. But, you know, kudos to the referee for letting that play out, you know, because when two guys go for the ball, I've always thought that the goalkeeper, you know, understandably gets a lot of protection in the game. But sometimes, you know, a 50-50 ball, they get a little bit too much protection. In this case, they didn't.
I'll be honest, when I first saw that, I thought it was an own goal that the keeper just dropped.
Oh, really?
That's what it looked like on TV. It looked like it was an own goal that he just dropped.
He had some help. In fact, I think Toronto 2 tweeted out that it was an own goal. I think they thought that the defender kicked it into the top of the net from the line, but that's not how it was scored. So it would have gone in anyway, so it would have been a tough own goal. After they allowed Klaus to head it, it was pretty much – it was a done deal. It was going in the net. So congratulations. He got the first goal for Orlando City B that wasn't scored by the other team. Because as you will recall, the previous game, Louisville City put one in their own net.
Yeah.
And then the third goal was set up by Da Silva as well, and that was on Lewis. That was to Lewis Neal. So you've got a game where both of the defensive midfielders score a goal, and that doesn't happen very often.
No, that's a little odd. You're right.
Haji Berry showed a tremendous amount in that game, that he is not just a fast guy. I mean, yes, he used his speed to harass the back line all night, but he had some moves. He had one move where he nutmegged the defender, got into the box, and the goalkeeper made the save. So it was a little bit unlucky that he couldn't put that one away, because that would have been a tremendous highlight goal. And he had another moment where he danced through, I think, five defenders in the box, kept the ball on his feet while he went around everybody, and then he had his shot blocked. But Haji Berry was tremendous, and he has come a long way, I think, since last year. But it'll remain to be seen what he brings to the first team. But he is, at the USL level, he is an all-star.
Oh, without a doubt. Like you said, all the attack looked phenomenal. They were in the right place. They were making the passes, as we saw from the stats. And they were making, I don't want to be in too much hyperbole, but there were times they made Toronto look silly. You know, with some of the moves that they made and the decisions that they made. I mean, it was I was blown away by their play. And like you said, I mean, Haji, definitely an all-star at the USL level. And hopefully that bodes well for him when he moves up to the first team.
Absolutely. So a big win. We're gonna talk to one of the players that was heavily involved in that win, Zach Carroll, here in a minute. Before we do, I want to sing the praises of another kid who I think is going to have a tremendous future. Center back Leo Pereira played a phenomenal game, and he's the kid you may remember. He's on loan from Paranaense down in Brazil, the partner club. Yep. And he played left back the last game. Not a natural left back, but man, does he look good as a center back. He's so very comfortable with the ball at his feet. He had a couple of instances where, you know, he didn't have a lot of an outlet. He didn't have a sure outlet, so he just carried the ball to the corner and managed to turn and fire it upfield in a very small amount of space. Very soft feet, it seems like. He's a big kid, uses his body well. I think that he's, I want to say he's 21, so he's still a young kid. And he's a guy who I think has a pretty bright future.
Agreed, and he and Zach Carroll played well together on the back line. And I know we were talking a lot about the attack. I want to give some props to the defense because, of course, when De Silva goes out, there was 20 minutes left on the clock. The entire team was able to, you know, they went to a 4-4-1. They were able to hunker down, and at no point did it seem that there was – any chance that Toronto was really going to be able to claw one back. They weren't able to, you know, have anything developing, you know, out of the midfield, you know, pushing forward. Orlando City B was all over every ball. It was, you know, anybody goes out and you're a man down, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm always like, oh crap, here we go. You know, I'm watching it. I'm watching the clock. 5 minutes goes by, 10 minutes goes by, 15 minutes goes by. I'm like, all right, we got this. And it's, you know, 10 minutes, you know, with 10 minutes left, I was like, okay, you know, I wasn't even really worried anymore because I'm not kidding. They were playing well enough that I was just like, all right, you know, I was feeling really good about it. So, you know, some definite, kudos to, the defense for, shutting it down, not just that last 20 minutes, but, you know, pretty much all game.
Yep. A better game from Kevin Alston than we'd seen the first couple outings. PC played left back from the first team. He was a little shaky at times, I thought, but he also made a lot of nice plays as well. So it was a good effort. I wasn't as optimistic as you. I know that having the two-goal lead afforded them a little bit of cushion so that they didn't have to be nervous and play tight. So they were able to relax and say, okay, if we give one up, it's okay. But you know, they were able to play more relaxed, I think, with that extra goal in their back pockets, and that was good to see them see it out like that. I'm so superstitious. I didn't even write my lead until stoppage time.
Wait a minute. I know what the difference is. You were at the stadium. I was at home drinking beer.
Yeah,
that's why I was more relaxed. Okay, yeah. Now we've got to figure it out.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm just superstitious. If I would have written a lead saying that they won their first game, there would have been bang, bang, two goals in a minute. And I would have been like, crap. So I waited till stoppage time to write the lead. I just basically did all the descriptive stuff and then left the lead paragraph till stoppage time so I could finish up real quick. And then, you know, as we usually do, we post the story, and then go get quotes and throw the quotes in and add to the story with a little bit of statistical stuff as well. So, good win for Orlando City B. And why don't we talk more about that with our special guest, Zach Carroll, coming up right after this. Joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week is none other than Orlando City B center back Zach Carroll. Of course, Orlando City B getting the first victory of the 2017 season earlier this week. A big 3-1 win over Toronto FC 2, another MLS reserve side, and a nice showing for the young Lions. Zach, congratulations on the first victory with Orlando. It had to feel good to get that monkey off your back.
Oh yeah, thank you. No, it felt great. You know, we've been working real hard towards this, and to finally get the first win, and hopefully the first of many to come.
Now, head coach Anthony Pulis was very appreciative of your efforts, as well as Leo Pereira, a fine showing by the center backs in that game. Can you just tell us a little bit about what it was like to go up against like Malik Johnson and some of those guys for TFC2?
Yeah, you know, those guys are definitely great players. You know, those are the type of guys you game plan for, and Ant gave us, you know, the rundown of them, and so that, you know, that definitely helped us, and you know, their tendencies and stuff, and you get excited as a player to go up against a team like that, and to, you know, to show what you're made of, and you know, it was a great showing for the team, and you know, I can't be any more pleased with it.
Zach, congrats on the win. Of course, you guys were coming off of two losses to start the season. What changes, adjustments did you guys make heading into the game?
You know, we tinkered with our formation a little bit. So, you know, that definitely helped a lot. And we had a, you know, a sit down meeting with, you know, coaches and players, and it was just kind of, it was a good thing to just get everything out there in the open, and, you know, kind of talk about what we wanted to be as a team and what our identity was. So that definitely helped us as well. And, you know, it's the first two games, it was, you know, we had a couple good spells here and there. And, you know, this last game, I think all the pieces really came together well. So I think that's what really helped us there.
And Zach, you actually had a hand in the opening goal, the first goal that Orlando City B scored for themselves in the new stadium and this season. The play was kind of a little bit of a broken play off of a corner kick. Tell us about what you saw, and I mean, it was fortuitous for you because the first guy picks up the ball and tries to kick it. It's blocked and comes right to you.
Yeah, it was pretty funny play. It was a ball to the, you know, the backside, and you know, my initial thought was to try and head it back across, and I actually headed it right off of Leo, and it dropped down to him, and then he turned to try and cross it in and got blocked, and then he did a very good job of sort of shielding the guy too, so the Toronto guy couldn't get it. And it's just one of those plays where you just think, oh, I'm just going to throw it back in the mixer and see what happens with it. And luckily, I had Paul hopped on it and came at it with the goalie and took a good bounce our way, and it was a good first goal for us.
Well, we were all happy to see it, I can tell you that. The thing, of course, we weren't happy to see was that red card warranted or not, depending on your point of view on Da Silva. What was the mentality change at that? You guys still had 20 minutes of game left. You know, you had the lead, but what was going on through your head?
You know, through our head, it was just, you know, nothing's gonna phase us. You know, it's just another little bump in the road, and, you know, good teams can take that kind of situation and, you know, just grasp it and take it as it is. And, you know, I thought the guys responded very well. We set up our lines and we made it very hard for them to try and break us down. And I thought we did a very good job defensively after he got sent off. And I mean, the score shows, you know, I didn't think they had any real good opportunities after that happened. And, you know, it's a testament to the guys on the field.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys kind of dropped into a 4-4-1 there, and it, despite having the numbers advantage, Toronto was just lobbing balls in from distance. They had no build-up play whatsoever, couldn't figure out a way to unlock the defense. And I think we saw maybe the beginning of a very, very good partnership this season between you and Leo in the middle.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed playing alongside of him, and I thought it was a very good performance for the both of us. And as a unit, you know, the back four and the guys in front of us as well. So I thought it was a very good team performance, and like I said, I'm very pleased with it.
Well, speaking of making the adjustments, obviously, you know, coming in to OCB, you know, playing with the guys, working on that chemistry, how have you been adjusting to the Orlando climate and, of course, the beautiful new stadium?
Yeah, no, it's been a perfect changeover. You know, I lived in I went to residency and lived in Bradenton for 6 months back in high school. So I had a little bit of taste of the Florida weather there. And, you know, coming from a Michigan guy, you can't beat the weather down here. So that's been good. And, you know, the guys have really come together as a unit very well. And, you know, guys get along great. And it's been very fun so far.
Now, Zach, you obviously played with New York Red Bulls too, a very successful team, probably a team that shows, you know, Orlando City B fans, where that team could go in a few years when the academy starts becoming a true pipeline of talent for, you know, for not only the USL side but for the MLS side as well. What are some of the differences between the two organizations?
To be honest, I don't see very, very much of a gap between them. You know, we've had many academy guys come in and train with us, and, you know, they've done very well so far. And, so, you know, in the future, once these guys, who are coming up, once they start getting their opportunities, it's kind of all on them. It's just about them, you know, making the most of their opportunity. And so, you know, I see nothing but good things in the future for this club.
Well, speaking of opportunities, what are you hoping to? What are your personal goals? Where are you hoping to be, to do, to accomplish with OCB?
I want to win the championship. I had a taste of that last year, and you know, I was very, very lucky and very thankful for, you know, my first year as a pro to be on the championship side. And you know, coming from that team, I want nothing more than for the guys on OCB and just the Orlando City organization as a whole to, you know, to have that same feeling. And so, you know, I really hope that, you know, we can just keep on improving and, you know, hopefully hit our stride here later in the year and make a good push for a championship.
Zach, how does the team, or how do you as a player approach, you know, being on a team where the lineup, you know, the lineup is going to be different week in and week out in terms of who's starting, who's coming off the bench? There might be MLS guys starting, first team guys starting a game here and there. And then, you know, back to the so-called MLS or USL guys. What is that like mentally for you, knowing that every game, potentially, you're going to have to play next to somebody different and sort of figure things out while other teams like, you know, Cincinnati or Tampa Bay, they're pretty much together all the time and able to field more consistent lineup.
You know, it's I mean, we knew what we were getting ourselves into at the beginning of the year. You know, that's the kind of thing you have to go through when you're a feeder team kind of like us. And and you know, your mentality just has to be that, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to perform to the best of my ability. And, you know, if every guy is thinking the same way like that on the field, no matter if it's a first-team guy or, you know, a USL guy or, you know, a USL guy who you know, might see the field just here and there, you know, your mentality should be, you know, I'm just going to do what I can and give what I can for the team. And so, you know, that's the kind of mentality you have to have. And, you know, you just, as a team, like I said, if everyone's got that same mentality, then, you know, the performance shouldn't really change much, you know, depending on who's out on the field.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to get your thoughts on Coach and his, obviously you're coming in, you know, new coach for you. What's your take on how he does things, the system he's running, especially like Michael said, with, you know, all the guys coming in and out?
Yeah, no, he's been a great coach so far. You know, I had a lot of talks with him in the off season, and you know, I can't be any more happy with Ant. And he's done so much for our team so far, and I think one of the best things about him is he's a great organizer and a great leader. He'll give us what he thinks we need to do, and you know, it's on us as a team to take his words and put it in action. And so, you know, Ant's been great so far, and he's really helped me improve on the things I need to work on. And you know, hopefully it's nothing but up from here.
So I want to know who you like sort of idolized growing up and who you sort of modeled your game after? What players, you know, did a young Zach Carroll, not that you're not still young, a very young Zach Carroll, look up to and try to emulate?
I always loved Vidic at Man United. He's a beast, and you know, he was always a great passer of the ball, and his mentality always was, I'm not gonna let you get by me no matter what. And you know, he was always out there winning headers, and you know, guy kicks him in the face, he's right back up and going after the next play. So you know, I always looked up to him, you know, growing up and trying to play like him.
Beast mode, I like it. What are you doing to emulate that? What types of things are you, what parts of his game are you trying specifically to make your own?
You know, I think just the simplicity of his game. You know, he's not a center back where you're gonna see him try and dribble out of the back, or you know, do these fancy flicks, or you know, just he goes out there and he does his job, and he does it very well. And I think that's what I've tried to emulate the most, is just you know, the simplicity of the game, and not make it any harder than it has to be, and to just go out there and do what you know you can.
You know, one of the hardest things I think for a player is to know where the edge is, you know, how to play to that edge without going over. Obviously, yellow cards are part of the game. Now that you've picked up a yellow card or two this season, you know, how do you manage, you know, yourself to try to play, you know, aggressively and hard, but still stay, you know, safe from, you know, one of those dreaded yellow card suspensions?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you know, to be honest, I've never really been put in a spot to where I've really had to worry with that. You know, I think that comes as a mentality as a player where, I mean, you see guys like Philip Lahm and stuff, you know, they go their whole career, you know, thousands of games and never had a red card or been really suspended. So I think that just comes down to the mentality of the player. And, you know, once you hit that, you know, kind of fine line of, all right, well, now I kind of have to watch it. Now that's when your play comes in to where, okay, maybe I don't go in and, you know, studs up on a tackle, or, you know, try and get that big slide tackle. So I think it just comes down to smart defending and not putting yourself into situations to where, you know, you could get hurt on a yellow card suspension or a red card.
Well, looking ahead, Saturday, Charlotte comes to town. You guys will be hosting in the new stadium. How are you feeling about that game? What type of formation do you think we're going to see? And are you hoping to get on there on the other end and maybe contribute to another goal again?
Yeah, no, I definitely would love to get in there and help contribute, you know, maybe even get a goal myself on a set piece or something. But yeah, I think you'll see mostly kind of a couple new guys come in the lineup. You know, we've had a pretty tough stretch of, you know, games pretty close in the time period. So I think there'll definitely be a couple changes to the lineup, but you know, like we talked about earlier, it's all about those guys stepping in and you know, raising the level or keeping the level of it as it is and as it was for the last game. And, you know, I think we're very excited for the game. You know, getting that first win, you know, it's kind of like a shark in the water. You know, you get the first ton of blood and now you want more of it. So, you know, I think that first win really helped us, and it'll definitely help us push for more.
I love it. Blood and water. All right, Zach, before we let you get out of here, just want to get your thoughts, final thoughts on, you know, what you think the key matchup is Saturday against Charlotte, and you know, and what maybe a couple of the guys that haven't been in the lineup yet that we might, you know, watch out for.
I think definitely with Charlotte, you know, going back to last year with Red Bulls, you know, they beat us at our place, and then, you know, we went to their place and we're up a man, but, you know, they made it super tough on us. So, you know, you're going to see a team that's very well organized, and, you know, they're going to fight for the full 90, no matter what the scoreline is. So, you know, we're going to have to be ready for a battle with them. And, I think the key to that is, you know, just stopping, you know, their front six, and, really, really capitalizing on the chances that we get. And, you know, I think a couple of the guys, you know, a couple of the subs that came in last game, I think will be put in the lineup. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not really sure, you know, what the changes will be, but, you know, it'll be a great game, and, hopefully we'll come out on top.
All right, Zach Carroll from Orlando City B, a central defender. Thanks so much for being with us on the podcast, and good luck to you this season.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, thanks again to Zach Carroll for being with us, OCB center back, and had a nice game on Tuesday night. The Young Lions will be back in action Saturday night at home against Charlotte. Go out and see them. They need some support. I know that some people don't want to go see a reserve side, but if we get anything close to what we got on Tuesday night, it's going to be an entertaining game. Charlotte presents a little bit different opposition, but there were only a little bit over 1,000, just about 1,100 people there on Tuesday night, which would have been a pretty good crowd in Melbourne, but it doesn't look that full in Orlando City Stadium, which holds 25,500. So go out and see the Young Lions. You know, it's a lot easier to get a ticket for them. It's less expensive, and you get to experience the new stadium and see some of these young up-and-comers. And believe me, if Richie Larea plays anywhere near what he played Tuesday night, it'll be worth the price of admission just for that alone. So go see him. Dave, we got the New York Red Bulls coming up on Sunday. And that's not a team that Orlando City has done very well against historically here the last 2 years in MLS. One win, three losses, and a draw against Red Bulls. Usually it's Sasha Kljestan ripping them apart in the middle and Bradley Wright Phillips finishing. This Red Bulls team, last year they came in 1-6, and that game was in Red Bull Arena, and Orlando City had a lead, and the Red Bulls turned it around pretty quickly and went on to not only salvage their season, but went on a really strong run. I think they won like 6 or 7 of their next 8 games and just took off. Orlando City needs to get back to playing good, solid, fundamental soccer, and needs to finish chances on Sunday in order to avoid a similar fate. What do you see as the key matchup in this game?
All right, so the key matchup for me is going to be Bradley Wright Phillips being fed by Sasha against Spectre and the rest of the back line. I know we've picked them a lot, but this time, given the history, that is even more important. If we can keep them off the board or maybe to just a goal, I think that allows Orlando City to come away with at least a draw, maybe a win. I think that being back at home is going to and having that first road game out of the way and everybody's nerves all up that we talked about earlier, I think that they'll settle down being back at home again, and it'll allow them to relax and open up a little bit. So then.
Well, sorry about that, folks. We had a little bit of a technical audio gremlin creeping in there at the end of the show. Sorry about that. We will try to take care of that next week. Anyway, Dave would go on to predict a 2-1 victory for Orlando City. And I actually predicted the opposite, a 2-1 win for the Red Bulls. I don't want to predict a win for the Red Bulls, but I just think that Bradley Wright Phillips and Sasha Kljestan have been a thorn in Orlando's side, and the Red Bulls play very confidently against Orlando. So hopefully I'm wrong, and hopefully Orlando City will get a result at home, but I have my official prediction on record is 2-1 to the Red Bulls. Dave goes the other way, 2-1 for the hosts. So he also said that his key matchup, obviously, was the back line against – Orlando City back line against Bradley Wright Phillips. Mine was the defensive midfield against the you know, the Sasha Kljestan distribution and how they react to him. It's unfortunate. We had a pretty good end to the show, but had to redo it. So sorry about the Gremlins. I did predict the Kyle Larin goal for Orlando City because he tends to have good games against the New York teams, and hopefully it'll be the same again on Sunday. So thank you for listening. Please, if you like what you hear, give us a good review on iTunes, and you know, follow us at themainland.com. You know, everything we write is at themainland.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at themainland is our handle there, and we're also on Facebook. You can like us there, so please do. Michael Citro here for on behalf of Dave Rowe. Once again, thank you to Zach Carroll of OCB for joining us this week as our special guest. We'll see you next week. This is Michael Citro signing off, as I always do, by saying, Go City!